Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
I'd like to introduce Gordon Temple, who is the Chief Executive of the Torch Trust. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Gordon. It's good to have you on tonight. Do you want to just give us a bit of background into sort of maybe how Torch came about and some history on Torch Trust?
Yeah, certainly. We're just about to celebrate our 55th year. That actually was a milestone we passed on the 8th of June, but we're having an open day and Thanksgiving here at Torch House in Market Harbour on the 20th of September. But you ask, how did it sort of begin? And it began in the home of a couple, Ron and Stella Heath, who connected with a local church for running a youth group in their home called Friday Nighters. Unsurprisingly, it was held on Friday evenings in their home. And there was a young woman who was involved with that group who took her first job at the then newly opened RNIB training centre in Red Hill. And she said to Stella Heath one evening, could I bring along one of the young women from where I work? The centre was there really at that point in its history very much for giving vocational and life skills to blind and partially sighted people who weren't going on to higher education. She asked Stella Heath, her name's Lillian, by the way, and Lillian's still around today. Stella Heath sadly passed away a few years ago. But she asked Stella, could I bring along one of these girls? Which Stella said, oh, of course, without realising the enormous implications that meeting was going to have. Wendy came along and started coming regularly. And after three occasions, she was making serious inquiries about becoming a Christian, did become a Christian at that point. Well, Wendy's life was hugely influenced by this. She was not a good student, but becoming a Christian, her sort of attitude changed. And that change was noticed by the then principal of the college, who said to Ron and Stella Heath in a meeting subsequently, look, if you can do that for Wendy, why don't you have the rest of them as well? And, over a short period of time, Ron and Stella Heath had passed on the leadership of their Friday Nighters group, and instead opened their home on Sunday afternoon. The college was a residential college, so the young people there had not very much to do on a Sunday afternoon. And they opened their home and they came and they had food and they played records and they chatted. And Ron and Stella Heath introduced them to what they believed from the Bible. They sang together and they did all sorts of fun stuff. Quite a group of them, maybe most of the young people there. And that really is the beginning of it, because from that, you know, the benefit of providing a sort of home from home environment where blind people who were in fact feeling perhaps a little bit lost at that stage in their lives, trying to make sense of life, place where they could find a real home from home welcome, was a good thing. And from that started Torch's involvement of creating opportunities for Christian fellowship among blind and partially sighted people. And they discovered that these blind young people, who mostly read Braille, had very little available to them as in the area of Christian literature. So they wanted Wendy to have things to read that a young person might read. They found that all that was available was fairly heavyweight stuff that had been transcribed for people training for ministry. Not really suitable at all. So they learned a bit of Braille and started copying out things. So then I have to say, from that point, making Christian literature available in accessible formats has been another thread that has run through all those 55 years.
So where is Torch Trust at today? It's obviously grown a lot since those early days.
Yeah, well, it has indeed, and you know, from just working with a small group of young people, it's grown to serve many thousands of people, and not just across the UK, but internationally too. So today we do a wide spectrum of Christian reading, magazines, daily Bible readings, books for purchase, books for loan through the Free Postal Lending Library Service. And that readership extends to around 100 countries across the world, and to several thousand people within the UK. So they've grown in that respect, but it's grown also on that other thread I mentioned from the beginnings, of providing a Christian fellowship that works for blind and partially sighted people. And today there are around about 120 Torch groups across the country, and including a few of those done by telephone conferencing, what we call Torch Talk groups, for those who can't get to a geographic centre. And so, you know, in those two areas, there's been a huge amount of growth. And we are very, very blessed and fortunate to have two excellent buildings in the UK. One where I'm sitting at the moment in a recording studio in Market Harborough, and one in Hurstpier Point in Sussex, which we run as our holiday and retreat centre. So there's a lot that came out of that beginning. And, you know, there's an ongoing pattern of growth in the services and the reach of things Torch does.
You just obviously mentioned your centre down in West Sussex and the holidays. And I know you do also do Torch holidays as well, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we run around about 25 holidays for blind and partially sighted guests every year. And that's actually a growing number. We have a centre that was actually the first property that, as the charity grew, the founders, Ron and Stella Heath, bought for the trust. And it was a remarkable property. As it turns out now, nobody could have known at that time, it shares a boundary with the South Downs National Park and has direct access to footpaths into that area, into that scenic area, but also just a few hundred yards from a bustling village centre. And itself, the centre is quietly located. It's got a beautiful chapel that's now 100 years old. And it's just an ideal place to get away from it all. And we run those holidays as themed breaks. I mean, they all, of course, have a Christian spiritual dimension to them. But that's very, very variable part of the daily program. We have an activity holiday, which is extremely popular every year, where people do some pretty mad and sometimes dangerous stuff. Well, of course, we keep everybody safe, you understand, but we try. The go-karting is quite a popular feature for that, which is quite an adventure when the drivers don't see. And getting out and about in the countryside and up on ropes and all that sort of thing goes on, right through to just a sit in the sun time with outings to the coast in the summer. And there's growing popularity in that. So I'm pleased to say that this year we reopened the centre in June after a huge refurbishment to add new bedrooms and to make the centre entirely en suite to a high standard. And with, we always had good accessibility features generally, but now we've got a second fully accessible suite and a lift in the place, as well as a ground floor bedroom. So it's really been very much upgraded at the cost of about £400,000. I'm going to be down there just over a week. And one of the things we're doing now, which is really connects with something really important, I'm really passionate about for the future, and that is our response, particularly as a Christian foundation, our response to the life experience of those who are having sight loss onset happen to them. And next week there'll be one of our moving forward holidays. Well, sorry, I've got the terminology wrong there. It's not really a holiday. A moving forward break. To be honest, it's not really a break as either in most people's understanding of the terms, because actually it's full of content. And it's a combination of our sort of home from home hospitality, of a caring, safe place Christian environment, and some really good professional input, particularly for people who are just coming to terms with the experience of losing their sight. And we've been doing these new style breaks for a couple of years now, and they're extraordinary. The impact on people's lives is amazing. It's possible to change totally the direction of somebody's life, somebody who's really lost all hope as a result of learning they're losing their sight, thinking their lives virtually over, to people going away positive, feeling a bit better informed into how to face the changes, but most importantly, getting a real positive mindset, a real hope for the future over those 48 hours, which is just frankly amazing, and it's hugely significant, I think, in what's happening in those people's lives.
One of the things as well, I mean, it's brilliant, isn't it, the way, because obviously all the charities, RNIB, are now starting to try and meet people more at the site, at the start of sight loss, and it's so important that charities are doing that and individuals are finding places to go and people who can assist and change their life around, which is obviously what's happening at the breaks as well. But one thing as well I'd be interested to know is, I know you are involved with people like Spring Harvest, producing material for that. Are you quite involved with, say, the church's sort of mainstream for supporting visually impaired people within a mainstream sort of church or, I suppose, even training environment?
Yeah, well, absolutely. We do run training courses. I mean, we're great enthusiasts for that. In fact, actually, I have another role as executive officer leading something called Churches for All, which is a network of Christian disability focused organizations. And our shared goal really is to challenge and to enable, equip the churches of Britain to better include and involve people with disability right across the spectrum. We do that, a lot of these things together, because we realise that whilst, you know, there are very different provision and needs for different disabilities for a full inclusion. And when I say a full inclusion, I don't mean just being able to get in and around church and participate in church life, but to play a full contributory part as well. And we sort of had a common passion for that. And although there are great differences in the needs of different disability groups, and we all bring our different specialisms, actually, we were saying the same thing to churches, which is really not so much about abiding by, you know, disability discrimination law and the Equalities Act, but much more about following Jesus, which is, after all, what Christian faith is ultimately about, and recognizing that in Jesus' time, he was inclined to give religious authorities and people of power and influence a hard time, but for people who were at the margins of society, people who were sick, disabled, or various other ways ostracized and put out of polite company, he spent his quality time with them, and he kept affirming them and kept solving problems for them. And it's just his language with those people and the way that he spent his quality time with them just screams loud and clear to the church that actually church should by default be a model of inclusivity for people, whatever their disability. And to give practical effect to that, and you mentioned Spring Harvest, I mean, something we learned at Spring Harvest and tried at Spring Harvest was how to help people engage with worship, modern worship, where everything goes on a screen. The information that you need goes on a screen, so you don't know what's happening if you can't read the screen. But most particularly in worship itself, the words of the songs, the words of any liturgy, they all go on the screen. And so there is no sort of songbook that can be brailled in advance. People choose, the worship leader chooses what to sing, you know, maybe an hour before the program starts, and they maybe have 12 or 15 songs. So the challenge was, how can we give people braille and large or giant print words in an hour? And we developed a system which we call Worship for All, which you can now find on our website for free use of churches and Christian organizations, whereby you can upload what has been prepared to go on the screen from the software that's used to do that. You can upload that to our web service, and it will produce a fully formatted index with a contents page, page headers, all the formatting things anyone would expect in five sizes of large and giant print and in braille. In the case of using it for local church, clearly that doesn't produce the braille. It'll produce PDFs that can be easily printed out locally. But it does produce a braille-ready file that, if you can set up a relationship with somebody with a local embosser, can easily get the songs ready. But we did it at Spring Harvest, and we do it each year at Spring Harvest, in an hour or less, and hand out copies to those who need them as they come into the evening worship.
Right, that's a change since I was last there, because I've got quite a few of the large print books, which are a great resource afterwards as well, but having that as you go in, that's going to be brilliant.
Well, yeah, the practicality of the books are very good, but the books are very good. But the problem with the books, and we've done accessible editions of the book, the problem is that the book has a selection of songs which may or may not be used. And the typical pattern is that because that's a selection of modern songs, but the worship leaders decide on the day, so they may not use songs from that. Also, if nobody gives you a number, and they don't,
that's true.
If nobody gives you a number, by the time you've found it, it's happened. Yeah. So, there was a blind man who told me the first year we got this sort of working, he said, you know, I've always felt like I'm part of the audience. I'm sort of an onlooker in this, because I'm just trying to pick up what's going on from what I can hear around me. And you can get some pretty funny ideas about the words people are singing, if that's how you have to do it. He said, but now, with these words, I feel part of it. I feel I belong and I'm part of it. And I think that's exactly what we were trying to do. And that runs through the whole of our thinking about church engagement. So if somebody comes to us and says, my church is doing this book for Lent, we're working through this in our house group or whatever in Lent, then we need a little bit of warning, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, but we will do our level best to get that done, and that will jump to the head of the queue, because enabling people with sight loss to participate fully in every aspect of church life is a very high priority to us.
That's wonderful. That's really, really impressive. So we've talked about holidays and we've talked about inclusion. Are there any other sort of strings to the Torch Trust bow, if that's not enough?
The international side of our work is really thrilling, because, we have an operation in Malawi, Torch Trust for the Blind International Malawi, as it's formally called. but Torch Malawi. We have four African staff. They're producing their locally Braille Bibles and hymn books and a certain amount of large print too in the local key language of Chichewa, but also in nine other African languages. We've just had feedback from Nigeria of Braille Bibles getting through to blind people in Nigeria. That's been a project that's taken years to accomplish, mainly in the distribution of these. But the stories that are coming back of people who just cannot stop reading the Bible they've received for meals and the like, and people who are, you know, involved with Sunday school or with church leadership, you know, to have their own Bible that they can access is just producing fantastic reactions. But it's not just, again, producing Christian literature resources, but we have about 80 local groups meeting in Malawi, more typically under a mango tree than in a church or community hall. And they are typically in the poorest communities. Now, Malawi is, I think, at the last count, the eighth poorest country in the world. And I can tell you from personal experience, it's noticeably poorer in the south, where most of our groups are, in the district, the districts of the Lower Shire. And these are folks who are living in mud huts, communities who have very little in the way of manufactured goods. I mean, I have to say, my first trip, I think it took me 2 weeks to understand how people can live in the way they live. And yet I meet some remarkable blind people there, blind people who, with the help of their deep faith, are living life very, very vulnerably, as they aren't, you know, able to farm for themselves in a subsistence farming community. They can be extremely vulnerable. But in fact, perhaps the best story to tell you is that I think 2010, when I was there, I joined in with what they call loosely an overnight. This is a time of sort of praise and worship and get together that goes for almost 24 hours, goes right through the night. It was conducted under improvised sort of grass roof for shade from the sun. There were around 700 people gathered, coming in on the backs of trucks typically. Around 500 of them blind people. Now, I'm not sure in what context anywhere in the world you would get 500 blind and partially sighted people together. And they were fed by local people, cooking in African style, brought their pot with three rocks to form a tripod to light a fire underneath it. About 60 women cooking in the bush around the area to feed these folks three full meals during that 24-hour period. And the exuberance of their worship. And the whole thing was the only program that existed for the whole thing was in hand embossed Braille in the hands of the blind man who was leading the event. A few of us sighted folks, me, I had the privilege of speaking to people through interpreter, but mostly it was blind people leading blind people through that evening. So, you know, and we've seen in the years we've been involved there a real change from when blind people were kept largely out of church. You know, almost that thing that Jesus had to counter when people came along with a blind man to Jesus and said, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus' reply, I sort of can approximate with saying, "Wrong question." You know, he says, "This happened that the work of God might be displayed in his life." And you know, I guess any of us are Christians, that's what we really want, really, isn't it? God's work's displayed in our lives. Anyway, this you know, Jesus response, you know, is a good indicator. But out in Malawi, 25 years ago, when Torch started there, blind people were seldom welcome in church. They were a nuisance to be kept out. And now we've seen a number go through training for the ministry, a number of blind people we know are leading churches. And more generally in that area, blind people are very welcome in many of the churches of the country now, enthusiastically. And I think even best, sort of spontaneously, as a sort of, it's almost a non-event, which is the almost the ideal, you know.
In Malawi, you've really achieved that equality and non-segregation, really, isn't it? Like you say, it's everyone's coming together as one rather than, in so many places, blind and sighted coming together separately, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, obviously, there's a long way to go, but we know a particular network of churches which has a very enlightened leader. And we know they have actually a convention about spring harvest size, you know, with about 5,000 people in the bush every year. But there'll be 200 or 300 blind people among them, and they won't be there as like a group on the side. They're just integrated within the program. And a bit of an example of, you know, what a bit of a model, shall we say, of what we'd like to see more and more of in UK churches. I mean, there are some brilliant churches where people with disability, people with sight loss do feel fully welcome and fully involved. But we realise there's quite a long way to go. And I think mostly that's about helping people sort of think in the right groove, really. I mean, most of the stuff that makes things work for people with sight loss isn't rocket science, but those of us who are sighted, and I'm a sighted person, you know, actually, it's taken me, I have to say, a long while to really learn about how blind people experience things. You know, it's a real revelation to me. It's not, you know, I've talked a bit about how people need the words of the songs to join in, but actually, blind people tell me almost the most difficult thing at church is a sort of social time, the time with tea and coffee after the service, because there's that whole problem of how you meet up with people, and that you know, if you can't make eye contact, you can't see who's there, you don't know who's there, you can't reach out to them, and you know, and we form relationships in a sort of reciprocal way, but when as yourselves, you know, people don't see well enough to see people across a room, it's one way. That person always has to come and make the approach, and they need to think that through in order to make that happen. Those social things are the times when people feel welcome and included, or don't feel welcome and included, and they are crucial. And what bothers me is that, although it's hard to get really convincing, really solid statistics, anecdotally, I fear that blind and partially sighted people, perhaps more than other disabled groups, are less represented in the church, less prevalent in the church than they are in society at large. And that greatly bothers me, especially when, you know, the church has an older age bias. You know, one third of the Church of Britain is over the age of 65, and I think, isn't it, rough rule of thumb, you know, 70% of people with sight loss are over the age of 70. So, you know, it's quite bothering if people with sight loss are underrepresented in church as compared to society at large.
I mean, I definitely agree with that, with sort of my experience, especially having that little bit of sight. I mean, I've been to a number of churches, and it is that time afterwards, which is the hardest. We were in one in Timmouth, weren't we, Joel, a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
And everybody was absolutely fantastic, and we were really felt at home. But I have been to a number. I mean, I'm a worship leader. I have been a worship leader for probably 20 years, and that's easy. Give me a mic, give me a guitar. You know, and if the OHP doesn't work, it doesn't matter, because I know what I'm doing.
Yes.
The congregation knows what it's like to not be able to see the words. And when things go wrong and a musician forgets the music, I can just step up and say, yeah, no problem, I don't need the music. But yeah, like you say, it's that social time afterwards. And I think that can really tell within a church or any, I suppose, other organisations as well, how much people actually really care.
I mean, I think people do. And I think people, you know, are compassionate and thoughtful. But I know from some of my other blind friends, they will say, you know, I won't let anybody sit me down at the table and give me a cup of tea because I know that's the end of any conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
And the problem, you know, I'm not going to work too hard to defend my sighted friends, but the problem we have is that we haven't really understood what is necessary in order to facilitate good socialization amongst blind people. And a Christian blind young woman said to me when I said, how can we best be helping you as Torch Trust? Because somebody who's got, you know, good access to IT, then maybe they don't need so much the reading materials we produce, for example. But, you know, what is it we can best do to help you? And he said, I want to meet people. I want to meet people like me. And by that, she didn't mean other blind people, but people who shared the same interests, had the same sort of style, and the like. I want to meet other people like me. I only ever get to meet the people who want to meet me. And I thought that was really insightful, actually. Mm. And sighted people sort of need to hear that in order to realize that a little bit of thoughtfulness will help overcome that barrier, in that if we go and talk to a blind person, just as we would anybody else who was new to a situation, without being fretting that we're going to put our foot in it, say the wrong thing, whatever, just talk naturally, receive that person as a person, any person, into the situation in an uninhibited way, but put that little extra bit of attention in that says, hey, this person cannot find me. I'm going to have to go and find them if they are going to feel welcome.
I think that's a really good point, to be honest, because so many times you can go into, I mean, it, like you said, it goes across the board, doesn't it, with different situations, but just taking church for an example, you can go into church and yes, you can sit there through the service, but then you leave at the end and that's it, you know, because you don't feel confident enough or comfortable enough, or there's nobody with you to help you do the socializing afterwards, and that's, you know, like you say, you've gone in and then you've left without actually speaking to another person.
And I do think actually that this is actually quite, you know, an interesting area for church to think about. I do believe that in thinking about how disabled people are fully included in church life actually helps people to think about how to do church better for everyone. And one of the mistakes, I think, is to think this sort of social side is peripheral. It isn't. You know, a church is ultimately, it is a community. It is the kingdom of heaven on earth. It is a community of God's people. And that's what we're drawn into as Christians. And worship might happen if we're all sitting in rows. And remember, even for sighted people, you know, in church, in conventional sort of seating layout, in a conventional church situation, I'm looking at the backs of the heads of the people in front of me, and the rest of the people are behind me. The only eye contact I will have is with the person who's at the front leading. Except when we get up at the end of the service and start talking to each other, facilitated with a cup of coffee or whatever. So the community dimension, which I think is fundamental, needs feeding. And for a person to come to church and not feel part of that, they've missed a core element of the Christian experience, which is being in a Christ centered community, where we're following, you know, the two great commandments, you know, Jesus and his great simplification of the commandments, that love the Lord your God with all your heart and to love your neighbor as yourself. You can't love your neighbor as yourself if you don't actually talk to them and find out something about them and respond to that.
How can people get in touch, get involved with a local group, or access some of the services, you know, the books, the you know, and information?
The obvious place to start is website, www, somebody says wibbly wobbly world, torchtrust, all one word, .org. And there's a lot of information there. If you want to find out about groups, there's a, you know, thing where you can enter postcode and find the nearest groups and the contact details there. You can find out about literature there. We don't have an online shop at this stage, but we do have a way of searching a catalogue online. We actually do like people to talk to us. And so the telephone number is 01858 438 260, and we have a client services team that knows all about what we do. Well, I hope it's all about, or close to all about, what we do, and can be really helpful. We are very conscious. You mentioned, you know, the other big national sight loss charities. We're very conscious that we can't address every issue that people have. But we are part of this big network, and a lot of traffic goes between us and the RNIB and others in working out, you know, how we can best support people who call us and how we can respond to them. If we don't do something and we know somebody else who does, then we'll try and help that happen too. Email, I should tell you, info@torchtrust.org, torchtrust, one word, .org. Happy to communicate that way. You could also search for Torch Trust on Facebook. You can also hear about us on RNIB Insight Radio. We do a program on faith and disability at 9 a.m. Every Sunday morning.
Right. And we also on VI Talk as well carry your thought for the week. Most weeks I put that up as well for people. We have had some quite good responses from that as well in the past, haven't we, Joe?
Yeah, we have. People do like it.
I'm thrilled you do that, because that was the whole idea, that we gave a package that could go out there as a thought for the week. Initially, I guess we thought of talking newspapers, but it's found its place in a number of areas. I'm delighted you've picked up on that too. That's good.
I really appreciate, Gordon, the time you've spent tonight going into your studio and talking to us and hearing the whole history of Torch Trust, how it came about and how it's developed, and some of the fascinating things you're actually doing, like I said, with Spring Harvest and with sort of real-time church situations as well. So we really want to thank you for that. And obviously people do get involved, get in touch, and help, you know, spread the word as well of Torch Trust and the work they're doing.
Yeah, thanks very much, Gordon. It's been a pleasure to talk
to you. Thank
you
both. Thank you both.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.